I'm going to talk about standing firm and living well, or loving well in the world that we live in. The first part of our lives is about seeking after God, about finding Jesus and coming to Him. And after we do that, after we're experiencing His forgiveness and living in that grace, we need to share the news with everybody around us, no matter who they are or how different from us they might be. And when that happens, the tension of standing firm and loving well, sometimes it paralyzes us. We want to demonstrate the love of God to others and serve those in need, share the good news with those who are apart from God, but we don't want to embrace the immorality that often comes with the changes in our culture. Sometimes it leaves us confused and wondering where our place is in this world. In this all-or-nothing sort of society, sometimes it puts us caught between being ramrod, solid, just leaving the door closed to all people, or on the other side, getting so tired of fighting that we just give a blanket okay to everything that goes on around us, or even just remain silent because we're tired of speaking up. Caught between not wanting to alienate the people who need God just as much as we do, and not wanting to compromise our convictions, our biblical convictions and beliefs. Sometimes that gives us some very difficult questions, almost impossible seeming. Like, what's my role as a follower of Jesus Christ in today's constantly shifting culture? How can I stand firm in my faith and still be relevant to other people that seem so different from me in so many different ways? How should I respond when others say that my Christian views are unloving? And how does the Christian message apply to everyone when there are so many differences in cultures and ethnicities and lifestyles and orientations and political beliefs and spiritual practices? Is the whole Bible still relevant, or just some parts of it outdated, like the role of women or same-sex relationships? Has that gone past? Is the Scriptures reliable? Doesn't God love all of us, and didn't He send His sons to die so that we could all be saved? But if I stand for the truth, what will people think of me? How do I help my kids engage in culture without losing them to it? And how do I handle the barrage of all the constant changes in our world? Well, lucky for us, we have an example of a biblical example of someone who is living in the same kind of time and same kind of place as ours. And that's Babylon. That's Daniel that we just studied recently. He's a great example, and he shows us that we can show both love and righteousness when we're anchored in God, when we have humility and compassion and complete dependence on Him. In order for us to be able to stand firm in this culture, in the world around us, full of the changes, we need to be anchored. We need to be anchored in a way that keeps us, allows us to stand firm. In Daniel chapter 1, you'll remember that Daniel and his friends were taken from Jerusalem and brought to Babylon, and they attempted to assimilate them, to wipe out their names, to change their names from names that glorified God to names that glorified their false gods. They tried to take them away from their culture, to give them new Babylonian information, teachings, to take away their support systems, to force them to eat new food, to just make them part of their culture forcibly. In our world, we have similar forces working against us, trying to change our names, change our focus and who we are to be. But we have already been given a name by God. He created us to be a certain kind of person. Lots of forces try to rename us, but He created us for His purposes, not for our friends that try to influence it, not not their purposes or other people around us, not for Satan's purposes, who wants to tempt us and cause us to serve him, and not even for our own purposes, our desires to do the things that we want to do or pursue our pleasures. We were made for God's purposes, and we need to remember that and stay true to that name. We need to decide before we're tested what our core values are. Like Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, like Daniel, we have to choose before we're tested what we will stand by. When they were told that they were going to have to eat the king's fare, they already knew that they were going to serve God first, and so they immediately set about trying not to cave into that and to find another way around. If we set our core values first, we'll be able to resist those temptations by being prepared before they come. And we're going to need to take courage in order to stand, because trials are going to come to us. Trials from all different shapes and sizes, all the things that can face us. And they're going to be like heavy weights. I mean, we've all seen movies and read stories about people who are, you know, in mines or taken captive, and put burdens are put on them, jobs are put on them that just grind them to the ground, to the way it just breaks them as people. But how do we build strength when we go about building strength? We build it by lifting weights. What's the difference between that kind of weight that breaks us and the kind of weight that makes us stronger? Well, you know, we choose, or like a trainer chooses, a kind of weight that's right at the edge of what we can bear. That's a challenge for us, but doesn't break us. If only there was a way for us to go out into the world and make sure that all the challenges that we faced were sized just right for us, just enough to push us, to build us, but not break us. Well, the good news is God has promised that he'll do that for us, that with every trial that we face, he'll make sure that we don't have anything that we can't overcome. And he, with every temptation, he will make sure to provide a way of escape so that Satan can't overcome us. God is like our physical trainer. Even the challenges that face us are there to make us stronger, because he knows that we can be made stronger through them. We need to remember who we are. Another way that we need to stay anchored is we need to learn to worship God only. In Daniel chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar set up that golden idol, and he told everyone that they needed to bow down and worship that. Well, again, Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they had already chosen that they would worship God and him only, and they would not bow down to that. In our world, there are many things that we can worship. There's money, there's power and pride, and there's the pleasures that draw us. Whatever it is we choose to go worship, we'll become more like that. If we choose to worship God and him only, we will be like God. And that's going to be a constant struggle. We need to take a stand, even though the world may think it's silly, or things that we're doing don't make sense to them. We need to stand up in the face of that and worship God anyway. And we need not to worship others, even if we're threatened. Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael, they were willing to go into the furnace and be burned for their dedication. Our country is more and more testing us in different ways, giving us penalties for standing up for what's right. And it may get worse. We need to pray and worship God through those challenges and take courage in that, like Daniel and his friends did. And we need to give ourselves fully to him, even when we don't understand what his plans are, or whether we don't understand that his commands don't necessarily make sense to us. But we just need to trust him. Those are the times when we need most to trust him. That builds our faith and our strength, and trust in him the most. We also need to remember who's in charge. In Daniel chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar was warned that God is in charge, and that he needed to keep himself under control or he would be humbled. And still, he lifted himself up and put himself on a level with God, took credit for everything he saw around him, and God humbled him until he finally was able to recognize that God was truly in charge. Maybe one of the biggest struggles that we face in our lives is the struggle over who's in charge of our life, because we want to be in charge. That pride is as much a struggle for us as it is for anyone has been. We need to identify the pride in our lives, and that looks like when I want my way instead of God's way. When we find those places in our life, we need to humble ourselves to God specifically in those areas. And we need to put our feelings in the proper place, because our feelings want to be in charge too. It's very easy to be driven by our feelings and our desires, and many people are. They live their lives that way. But we need to put them in the proper place. And even when we feel things, we need to not do them. But how do we do that? It's pretty hard. They're so insistent. Well, Paul says in Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. We need to crucify our flesh. We need to put ourselves to death in order to get our feelings out of the way and submit them to God and let him be in charge. And we need to trust ourselves entirely to him, even when we want to control our lives, like Jacob. And Jacob always wanted to control everything in his life until finally he recognized that he was part of God's plan. He just needed to do what God said. Abraham, so many people in the Old Testament tried to do it their way. We're not going to be successful at that anyway. We need to learn to trust God and let him take control and do what he wants us to do. And then we need to pursue God's priorities. In chapter 5 of Daniel, Darius sees the handwriting on the wall, and it tells him that his days are numbered. How do you think he acted after that? Did that change his actions at all to know that he didn't have much time left? He really didn't have much time left, just that night. But we know that he definitely acted differently because he was partying with all of his buddies, but as soon as he saw that handwriting, he went to find out what it meant. And when Daniel told him, he fulfilled his promise and dressed him in robes and gave him the honor that he intended. It was too late for him, so he lost his kingdom and life. But that message is still powerful for us today because our days are numbered. How would you live differently if you knew that you only had 2 weeks to live? Would that change the things that you think are important or the things that you choose to do today? There's just not enough time to do everything that we want to do in our lives. So we need to live every day with purpose and urgency because there's just not enough time. We need to put first things first, and if there's room left over, do things that are not as important. I'm a huge culprit for being busy all the time. Most of us are. But in order to follow God's priorities, we need to focus our lives by saying no to things, by cleaning out some of our life and leaving room to put his priorities first. And we've had a lot of good lessons about that already from Brian and others. Being anchored in God is the first part. That's how we stand firm. And we can't have an influence with people in the world unless we stand firm like this. Once we start to develop this, we're never going to master these things. And if we had to wait for that, we would never talk to anyone. But what we need to do is pursue God's first priority, which is to seek the lost. God wants to find his children. How would you feel if you lost your child? I just read a story about a man that lost a child of his for 23 minutes in Paris, a foreign city. And his child had autism, and he knew that his child was in danger and lost. And those were the most panicky moments of his life until he finally found him. How do you think he would have felt right then if one of his children had said, "What are we going to have for dinner tonight?" Like, really, that's what you want to ask now when I need to find my son, your brother? Sometimes we get sidetracked by those things and lose our focus, but we're trying to win souls. Like, for example, who hasn't felt funny at one time or another when someone identified themselves to you as a Christian? "Hey, I'm a Christian too. I'm your brother too." Don't we have a tendency for a minute to like step back and go, "Are you really my brother? I'm not sure you're exactly right in all things before I really embrace you." You know, and I wish I could do this better, but in Acts chapter 18, when Apollos was preaching the gospel, he only knew about John's baptism. He didn't know about Jesus' baptism. But Priscilla and Aquila, they pulled him aside and they gave him the gospel more thoroughly. And he was a strong force to teaching for the rest of the world. When we meet someone who believes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, who believes that they're saved already, at least, at best, that's a person who just hasn't heard about the baptism in the name of Jesus Christ. I wish we could just restore them and just give them that piece of information that they're missing. Well, when we go find people, the first thing we need to do is connect with them, to get close to them. Not like a lawyer giving a closing argument, not trying to prove that we're right, but caring and honest and genuine first, caring about them, loving them as people. In Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, Paul says, "Walk in wisdom towards outsiders, making the best use of the time. Let your speech always be gracious or full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person." Well, that passage doesn't say that we need to have all the answers, but that if our speech is full of God's grace and seasoned so that it goes down good, it tastes good, that will help us know how to answer people, even if we don't have all the answers. Now, we don't need all the answers, but we do need to be able to give an answer to anyone who asks for the reason for the hope that's in us. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, says that. And we can all do that. We all that believe in God, we know why we do. That's something we can share with everyone around us, even if we don't have all the answers. Our first step is to reach people, because everybody wants to be loved unconditionally. Everybody wants attention and interest shown to them. We don't have to be everyone's best friend, but we do need to show the compassion and the kindness and the honesty of Jesus to them. Do you remember when Jesus met the woman at the well? Did he confront her directly with the fact that she was a faithless woman living with a man? First, he met her and talked to her at the well, and that really impressed her, his willingness to, as a Jew, to talk to her before he told her about the truth when she asked him questions. Did he compromise? Never. But he was accepting. Remember the woman caught in adultery? Did he judge and condemn her the way the priests and scribes wanted him to? He did not. He had mercy on her, and after convicting the rest of them, he forgave her. Did he compromise? Never. What she said, what she did was wrong, and she knew that. But he met her and moved her. Remember Zacchaeus? Did he rebuke him for being a crooked stealer of money from the Jews? No, he said, "I'm going to come and eat at your house today." He ate with tax collectors, sinners, and publicans. He met with them, and then he told them the truth. He guided them to the right. Jesus made relationships with people before he corrected them, and we can do that too. And then we have to walk the talk. We have to live what we believe, because most people, that's what they want to see, whether or not we believe in God, whether we believe for real in the things that we say. We first have to earn people's respect, and then we can build a relationship with them and influence them. We can let people know what God has done in our lives and spread positive thoughts about God wherever we go. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 16, it says, "In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. That's how we let our light shine. We share what God has done in our lives. And if you're afraid that's not going to land, well, there's something we can be sure of, and that is that everyone is going through something. Everybody has some kind of hurt and needs God's love. And not only that, everybody has a soul. And because everybody has a soul, everyone's on a spiritual journey somewhere. And we can help them on the right path that way. And then we need to show them God. Show the Lord to them. Bring people somewhere where they can encounter God, where they can learn about Him and meet His children. At a Bible study or a Bible class or here. Do you think people can come here and experience the presence of God? I hope so. We should make sure that they can, because He's here amongst us, and that's why we're here. As you get to know people, you'll find out that they have different ideas about God that are formed by things they've heard or things they've experienced. If we can listen to them and show respect for that and understand why they believe what they believe, that'll go a long way towards building trust, which we need to be able to help correct them. And then we can show them the truth of who God is. So you may not feel up to this task. You may say, I'm not like Daniel. I'm not able to share this with people around me. But just look at Daniel. He was a prisoner from a conquered nation. And he changed to be a strong influence for God in that ungodly country and world. How did he do that? God worked through him and can work through us. In 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 17 and 18, it says, Now the Lord in the Spirit, and the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we all, with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. When we behold God, when we worship Him, we are being transformed to be like Him. We can become that kind of light if we have our close relationship with God. And He can change us. And in order for us to make a difference in the world, we have to be different. The statement has really stuck with me just recently. It's like we have to be different or else we don't make a difference in the world. Well, all this information isn't necessarily going to make everything easy. In fact, it might even make some things harder for you. But in order for us to be able to stand firm, we need to be anchored in the Lord and to keep that relationship growing and strong. And we need to be compassionate and loving in order to seek the lost. But I have a couple of tips for you. I'll try to go through quickly. To help us influence the world. There aren't any quick answers, no scripts that we can lay out, because each of us has our own life. But we need to keep our standards high and grace deep. God, Jesus, when He spoke to the people, who they knew that adultery was wrong, but He told them, no, not just the act, but looking at someone with lust in your heart is committing adultery in your heart. He raised the bar even higher, but He still showed them a way where if they wanted to repent, they could come to Him. So as grace got higher, as the standard got higher, grace got deeper so that we could still find a way to God. We need to be able to be that way like Jesus is. We need to be able to accept people without approving of their behavior. Our culture wants us to be one way or the other. You're either all in and fully approving, or you hate them entirely and you're evil and unloving. But we can love people unconditionally and not approve of the things they do, just like Jesus was able to do with the people that we talked about. And we need to be love like Him that way. We need to try not to let the tone get contentious. It does happen, and sometimes people, it does help people sometimes. But it's hard to imagine someone getting in a knockdown, drag-out argument and saying, you know what, you're right. I need to get baptized and obey God now. I'm sure it's happened, but probably rarely. So if you love them, you can tell them, okay, I love you enough that I don't need to win this argument. I care about our relationship more. Let's come back to this topic when we're not so passionate about it. We can lead them to the truth by identifying with their struggle, because we all have desires to do ungodly things as well. And the thing is, we just don't indulge them. When we see the desire to do something wrong in us, we identify it as wrong, and we stop ourselves from doing it. We ask God, we repent, and we ask God to help us continue. So we can show people that we understand how hard it is to resist, but that we need to conform ourselves to God's law and not to be trying to conform it to us. And then finally, we can paint the picture of what it's like to come home. When someone decides to go their own way, life can sometimes be hard for them, and we can be there to help them, but most of all, we need to tell them what it's like to come back, to give them the picture of the prodigal son. God is ready. We're ready to have you come back. Call me first if you change your mind, because I want to listen and I want to be there for you to come back. So this is not going to make everything easy, but when we look at Daniel, we can see that he stood his ground over and over again, and he even risked his life for it. He didn't argue or defend or explain or debate that we know of. He just made his boundaries clear with direct and respectful communication, and he did what was right. And he shined like a beacon of God's truth for 70 years and through 4 regimes. We can stand firm in the changing culture around us, and we can do more than just win an argument. We can win souls with love and righteousness. Souls of people who will also stand up against this culture and be lights in the sinful world. If you're ready to become a Christian today, if there's anything we can do to help you on that journey, we want to. We want to help you. So if there's anything we can do, let us know and come forward as we sing this invitation song, and we'll try to help.